Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking once again with friendship expert Shasta Nelson. She's the founder and CEO of GirlfriendCircles.com. She's been featured on the Today Show and other television and radio programs. And we are going to talk with her today about her latest book called Friendimacy, How to Deepen Friendships for Lifelong Health and Happiness. Welcome once again to Life Quest, Shasta.
Thank you. It's always an honor. Love our conversation.
Why did you write this book at this time? I know this is your whole theme of career, but...
Yeah, well, it was interesting because my first book was more on how to make friends as an
yes.
adult, kind of paying homage to the fact that most of us are replacing half our close friends every 7 years. But as I've been really teaching and speaking on that for the last number of years, I just kept seeing over and over and over that for many, many of us, our loneliness is not coming from a lack of not knowing enough people. It's from not feeling deep enough with a few. And so this book really is speaking to the fact that for most of us, it's not that we need to go meet more people, it's that we need to go deeper with some of the ones we already know.
But you say early on in the book that... And I found this very interesting. Over the last several decades, there's been this decline in groups and organizations that kind of bring people together.
Yes, there have been. And I think we're still trying to figure out new ways of doing that. But I'm finding that we are now more networked, meaning we know way more people, like social media. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're moving so often, we're changing jobs. Like, our networks are bigger than they've ever been. And yet I think we've lost something in having the intimacy in a few of those. And so we've kind of move toward quantity over actually knowing how to go deeper and be more long-term and more intimate with a few people. So I'm hoping that I can help teach and bring awareness and really identify what those actions are that we can actually take control of and do in our lives to build some of those into more meaningful relationships.
I remember about 20 years ago when my family moved from the Northwest to Knoxville, Tennessee, in the Southeast, and one of my youngest was barely a year old, and the other child was 5 years old. And it was really kind of easy to connect with people who had the same kids, age children, you know, in church and play dates and all that sort of thing. As the children got older and developed their own friendships, the relationship between the adults sometimes faded.
Yeah.
And you say that some people say, well, you know, the reason I don't have as many friends is because, well, I spend too much time with my kids, or I have to. And then others say, well, you know, it was a lot easier when I did have children.
I am of the belief that for every life stage and every location that we could possibly live, that there are advantages and disadvantages, you know, things that make it easier and things that might make it harder. And so certainly being a parent helps you kind of gravitate to other people in a similar life stage and helps you. Sometimes meeting other people in a similar life stage can be easier in that life stage than some other life stages. And yet, yeah, there's some common challenges too. It's sometimes harder to schedule things without the kids. It's sometimes harder to have a long conversation without being interrupted, you know. And so I think my invitation to everybody, because everywhere I speak, Dwight, it's so interesting. People, like, I just came back from a national book tour, and in every city, somebody will raise their hand and say, but I think it's different here. I think it's harder here in this city for the following reasons. And I said, that's so funny, because I've gone to 7 cities in the last couple of weeks, and they all said the same thing. And I think it's that we just live in a place where we're, all of us, like, cultural. I think this is a cultural issue, and I think we just don't have the priority around our relationships, and it feels like we can't fit it in, and it feels really challenging, and we're all trying to make meaning of that and figure out why me and why this location. And I think it's simply recognizing that no matter where we live and what our life stage is, if we're not intentional, if we're not sinking into some community that's already kind of developing this consistency for us, it's actually really challenging, and we have to be really intentional about it, because it, in homage to my first book, it doesn't just happen. Like, we don't just become deep with people without doing the things that actually help produce that result.
And this intentionality is important, because isn't it true also that friendships evolve or devolve? And
yes,
they can change. And we sometimes, you know, our first reaction is, well, what did I do wrong?
Right.
But sometimes the season of that friendship's over.
Absolutely. all of our relationships ebb and flow. And I think one of the more important things that we can pay attention to is recognizing that without it having to be all or nothing. So somebody doesn't have to be a best friend or my enemy, or it was not to break up. It doesn't have to be this black or white kind of extreme thing. And I run into that a lot, where we feel like we have to end this friendship or something. And I think to myself, so much easier when you think to kind of just an ebbing and a flowing, and saying this friendship may not be super meaningful right now or as consistent or whatever, but that doesn't mean it can't redo that, you know, and flow again in another couple years and stuff. And so holding recognition and honor of all these different relationships. And the more important thing is making sure that in this moment right now, have I developed the relationships and surrounded myself with a few people who help me feel known and supported in life, and trusting that those ones that are kind of, you know, a few degrees removed from us, we don't know, they could still move closer again down the road or not, and be okay with that. Certainly not every relationship needs to be a lifetime membership, lifetime membership in our friendship club.
Am I being insensitive if I suggest there seems to me, in my observation in my life, that there is a difference between the friendship concept with men and women?
Oh, I'm so glad you're bringing this up. So I think that there is a difference, but I'm not convinced it is a difference that needs to be there. Mm-hmm. I think we have culture. Our culture has shaped men's friendships. That's what we've given permission for. It's what we've told them is normal. It's what we've modeled. And I actually think there's a greater need for intimacy among men friendships. I think men need deeper friendships. I think it's a bigger issue. I think the white heterosexual American male are some of the loneliest people in the country. Hmm. And so I do think there is a current difference, but I don't think it needs to be prescriptive. It's just actually describing what is actually current. So that would be my read on it.
In your book, you say that there is an intimacy gap. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so the intimacy gap, as I say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your friendships, your current satisfaction with your friendships? And so this is a great question for your listeners to stop and think. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most deep, the most intimate, the most fulfilling, the most satisfying, how would I currently rank my level of satisfaction in my friendships? And the intimacy gap speaks to the fact of the gap between the distance between whatever number you say, whether it's a 6 or a 5 or a 7 or a 4, and the 10 that we say we know is possible. And so this entire book is trying to help close that gap, move that number that you're currently experiencing closer to the 10 that you're experiencing. And the statistics, I'll just say, and this is on women, I'm looking forward to doing one on men this upcoming year, but I interviewed 1,200 women a year ago on that question, and women were twice as likely to put a 1 or a 2 as they were to put a 9 or a 10 on their current level of meaningfulness on their friendships. Mm-hmm. And 3 out of 4 of us are giving ourselves a 7 or under. So, the vast majority of us certainly have a gap between what we're currently experiencing and wish we were experiencing.
Yeah. And in fact, I need to jump ahead and tell our listeners that you actually talk about this in your conclusion, ways to measure your growth in friendships. You equate also friendships as having an influence on our health and happiness.
Oh, my goodness. I just gave a keynote for a hospital, and it was just going over all the health research again. Blew my mind again. It is so, so significant. There are doctors on the record saying there is nothing that matters more. Not any diet, any exercise, whether you smoke or not, whether you are obese or not, whether you have a surgery or not. Like, there is nothing that matters more than your overall feeling of feeling supported and loved in this world. I mean, that love is the basis of our well-being, and it's the basis of our illness. And it is there. I could share so many studies with you that will absolutely fascinate you, but they all kind of support the idea that if you feel supported in life, if you answer the question no, whether you feel supported, your chances of death go up 3 to 5 times, depending on which illness or what, you know, but that's heart attacks, that's strokes, that's cancer, that's suicide. I mean, it's just all areas of death. You're more likely to have complications and mental illness and shorter life. It's staggering how much our sense of feeling connected is to our health.
I noticed in your book you also talked about the way people talk to each other, or the opening up vulnerability you use. But there are also some problems. Some friends always seem to deal with the same themes, whether it's problems in their marriage, or sometimes if they're older people, it's organ recitals about their liver or their kidney or their bowel movements or whatever. You know, so where does this all fit in? I mean, it's real life.
Yeah, vulnerability, I teach in one chapter 5 different areas of vulnerability, which speaks directly to what you're asking, and that is that vulnerability isn't only the one area that we often think it is, which is, you know, we bond over complaining or bond over our sharing what's not working or what's hurting or stressful in our lives, and that is certainly an important area, but there's 4 other types of vulnerability. And like one of those would be talking about subjects we don't talk about with certain friends. So if we've met over church and we talk about church, but we don't talk about our work with them, or if we've met at work and we talk about work or kids, you know, so whatever it is, we meet somebody and we create a pattern of what topics we tend to talk about. So an act of vulnerability that helps bond a friendship is broadening the topics we talk about, you know, or broadening what we do together. Building new memories in the memory bank and doing things outside of our typical pattern helps us bond and deepen. And is an act of vulnerability because it's stretching the pattern, the ritual, the kind of the habits we have with that particular friend. And so anytime we're increasing what we talk about, how we talk about it, what we do together, is always helping us glue more parts of our lives together and feel like there's more safety in that friendship, that there's no taboo subjects, you know, that we've practiced covering all these different things, and we don't have to filter ourselves or edit ourselves as much because we kind of feel safe that we can talk about anything with them. So all of those are acts of vulnerability. So with those friends that are always broken records on the same thing,
right,
it's our invitation to say, if I want this friendship to become more fulfilling or more deep, I'm going to have to figure out ways to broaden what we talk about. So I need to ask different questions. I need to model this. I need to encourage them to say, oh, that does sound awful. I hear you. And tell me about this. And what are some of the positives about it? Where are you feeling good? And helping encourage them to share in other ways, knowing that we will never feel close to them if we stay on that same broken record forever.
Right. When, as I mentioned, my family moved to the Southeast, and I had gone from being a pastor for several decades into radio work. So I come there to this church, just simply as a member without any reputation or background or title or anything like that. And I found it very enriching because I discovered something, Shasta, the people liked me for me, not for these other bits.
Wow, that's a good story to hear, because we often will hear the other if we're used to having people like us for certain things and those things are not there anymore. You know, when we retire.
Yeah.
And change any life thing, that's a really encouraging story to hear. How did that feel to you? Like, how did you know they liked you in a different way than they liked you when you were in Washington?
I think because they wanted to be with me, they enjoyed talking with me about things, they wanted me involved in their church program, but, you know, it was much more social than I had possibly experienced before, and part of that may have been my own response to those sorts of things.
Well, that's really encouraging. The statistics on pastors and loneliness is heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking. The numbers, the how few pastors feel like they can make friends is it's so heartbreaking.
And in generations past, that was actually taught by some of the seminaries. I can remember. But anyway, you talk about the consistency that is necessary. The fact is, though, you know, we do have family and we do have work and we have all these responsibilities. I hear you suggesting in your book, let's work at friendship.
Yeah, the consistency, unfortunately, is going to be one of the toughest rubs in our society because we don't have our lives structured around community in a way that we used to. I mean, there used to be times where we were a little more tribal or a little more community or our neighborhood or, you know, sitting out on our front porches or, you know, whether it was sitting around helping care for the kids and, you know, the men were doing something. And so we really do have a splintering where very few places exist where we can just step into and be a part of this one community anymore. And certainly some of us still have that in pockets, but it's not the norm anymore. And so the really two options any of us have on this consistency front is either A, we have to join something that is consistent, such as this is why church or work still are great places to meet people, because we don't have to schedule it. You know, we don't have to email somebody and say, hey, you want to show up at work tomorrow? And we don't have to schedule it, and we don't have to plan it 3 weeks out. And we're just simply seeing them on a regular basis. Same with our kids' friends and people at school. And so any place we can step into where there is a consistency built in is going to make it easier. That's why friendship felt easier when we were kids. It's not that friendship happened automatically. It's that our consistency happened automatically. And we, same with college. And so nowadays we have to try to find those things that we step into where it's already built. And if we don't, or if we need more, the only option is we have to figure out how to initiate and schedule that. And it's not going to just happen. And we have to kind of own that and say, okay, I'm not a part of a bunch of things where friendships are conducive, and I need to figure out how to schedule something regularly to to be building that. And we simply, you know, when you compare our friendships from college or from younger life, we logged hundreds of hours with these people. And now the idea that we could do that, having a lunch once a month with somebody, is just, it's just not feasible. It's impossible to get to intimacy at that kind of a rate, really. So we have to figure out how to put in the time with people, because that's how trust is built. So that's the big important part of that. We can certainly sink in and have an amazing afternoon with somebody we don't know well. And certainly we can have authentic, meaningful moments. But if we want it to be a friendship, it has to repeat itself. And that's where trust gets built. So that consistency becomes one of the three requirements of a healthy, meaningful friendship.
If you've just tuned in, folks, I'm talking with Shasta Nelson. She's the author of the book, Frintimacy, How to Deepen Friendships for Lifelong Health and Happiness. In part three of your book, and you've talked a bit of this already, but you talk about the obstacles, the things that get in the way of intimacy, which should be a part of friendship. Can you unpack that a little bit more?
Yeah, because anything, so the three requirements of friendship is positivity, consistency, and vulnerability. And I teach a Frintimacy triangle and give a chapter for each of those to help explain how to build a friendship on those three things. If you don't have all three of those things, you don't have a healthy friendship, and that's just the bottom line. That is the definition of a friendship. A friendship has to be satisfying, feel safe, and where both people feel seen. And so to have those three things happen, we have to have positivity, consistency, and vulnerability. So therefore, in answer to your question, anything that's an obstacle to those, one of those three things, is going to be an obstacle to a friendship. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important that we look at that. And I tended to focus a lot more on what I see are some of the fears that are really stopping us from leaning in. So the fear of, like, relationships not being mutual, or the fear of self-worth, low self-worth. Like, it doesn't matter how much somebody's loving you, if your bucket is leaking it, then it's going to be hard to build a healthy friendship. The fear of rejection was a fascinating one. The research there was so, so interesting. Our need as humans to feel like we belong is, like, hardwired into us. Our DNA, the idea of feeling scared of rejection, and that might be a strong word than most of us would use, but we all know the feeling when we walk into a room and we quickly assess, do I fit in here? Is there anyone like me? You know, and we quickly are trying to figure out, am I the only one of this age? Am I the only one that looks like this? Am I the only one this way? And we quickly, and that is our fear of rejection, stepping in, trying to either, we tend to either judge ourselves as unacceptable or unworthy, or we tend to devalue others who are there. And so all of those, it's so interesting how much that can affect our ability to bond and our ability to be open to each other.
Tell our listeners a little bit about the book format you have for reflection, for practice, worth remembering at the ends of many chapters.
Yeah, I wanted this to be a really, it's a very theoretical, like, there's a ton of theory and a ton of research in there, but I wanted it to be really accessible and practical. And so one of my metaphors that I use in the book is the metaphor of a health club. And we often think about when we go work out physically, we understand that it's going to be exhausting. We understand that we're going to sweat. Like, in fact, if you came home from the gym and felt like you didn't even do anything and you didn't sweat at all, you'd be like, that was disappointing. Did it work? We understand that goes together. And yet in our emotional growth is no different than our physical growth. And our emotional growth, it's interesting that as soon as we get a little uncomfortable or a little awkward, we tend to kind of pull away and say, oh, this must not be good. And I'm inviting us to say, no, you do need to sweat a little bit. You do need to strain those emotional muscles. That's how we grow. That's how we become more godlike, more perfect, more whole, more authentic. And so it is really important. And so the book is laid out where here's how you practice building this muscle. Here's how to, you know, I want you to think about it and apply it to your life. And so there are, every chapter has 3 to 5 practices of how to practice living out that that area. So, for example, in the chapter of jealousy, here's practices you can practice to, like, help make sure that jealousy isn't infiltrating your relationships or, you know, poisoning your spirit. So I try to do that in every chapter.
Tell our listeners where they can get a copy of your book, Shasta.
Well, hopefully at any bookstore, but certainly on Amazon and on BarnesandNoble.com and on Indie Books. And so it's available in every bookstore. It can be ordered at every bookstore, at least.
Shasta, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate you being with us on LifeQuest.
Thank you. Thank you for talking about these kinds of subjects. I really appreciate it. I think it's important to our personal and spiritual growth in big ways. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.